Not to ruin it for anybody, but today's shiur could be entitled Joshi Fort, the Battle of the Jericho, and
The walls came
a-tumbling down. That is today's parak. This is what we've been waiting for. So, if you remember, we crossed over the Jordan. Now we are in
the occupied territory.
Right. We're on the in the west bank of the Jordan River, and we have already sent out some spies to look into it, and we're good to go. So the Yericho sogeres umisugeres b'nei b'nei Yisrael ein yotze uvein ba. So Yericho knows that we're coming, and with that, they seal themselves in. No one can enter, and no one can exit.
Today, you can't go to Yericho today either.
Right, the same.
The
casino.
Exactly.
Canaanites or fishing, whatever they were, of Jericho, built a wall around.
Yes, it was a walled city. It was a walled city, and they barricaded the gates because they knew it was coming. God says to Yoshua, these guys are as good as yours. Don't you worry about it. Here's what you have to do, though. I want you to go, and just one time, everyone should go, and they should march around the city. That's it. Do that every day for 6 days. Then, you'll have Vishiva Choanim, Yisu Shiva Shofros Hayovlim Lifnei Aaron, Ubiyom Hashvi Tasobas Yir Sheva Pamim Vakoim Yisku B'Shofros. Now, every day you're going to have seven Choanim holding a shofar, and they're going to walk around, but they're not going to blow. On the seventh day, though, they're going to walk around seven times, and after they go around the seven times, they're going to blow the shofar, and you know what's going to happen? Pasuk Hey, va'yabim shoch ha'karanayt b'karan ha'yovel b'shamachem eskol ha'shofar yariyu kol am trua gedola v'nafu chomas ha'ir tachter v'olam ish negdo. And with that, everyone's going to blow their shofar, and the walls will come
tumbling down.
Excellent, tumbling down.
Rabbi.
And then, I haven't even finished my verse yet, and then once it comes totally down, everyone will just go attack and wipe out the city. Okay? Yes.
Which day of the seventh is Shabbos?
Oh, that's an excellent question. You're a step ahead of everyone else. Sharp like a matzo ball. You can't see nothing about it. Okay. So what's the story with these shofars? What's the story with these horns? We start off in the source sheet on number one, always a good place to start. And it says, so this is in Parshas Baros, I believe. Moshe Rabbeinu is told to make trumpets that he will blow when he wants to gather the people. Kesef of silver, you token with anecha kemelech. And they will blow before Moshe like he's a king. Dan tararan. So aseilacha mishalcha. So it says, Asei lecha, it means what? Moshe, you're going to have to pay for it yourself. Asei lecha, lecha, ata osav lo acher. Right? You're making it, no one else. Ata mishtamish ben, ve'en acher mishtamish ben. Moshe, you're going to use it, no one else is ever going to be able to use it. Teva lecha, you should know. Share Yehoshua, Talmido, Shal Moshe, lo mishtamish behem. Because when Yehoshua, his student, comes around, he doesn't use them, but rather what does he do? He uses shofars. As it says, what happened there? So again, everyone knew what was happening. It wasn't a secret that the Jews are coming over the Jordan. So all seven nations got together and they said, let's all attack at once, because if we go one at a time, we won't have as good a chance. So they all got together in Yericho, thinking that this would be their best chance to stop the Jews. But I gave them over to you. Ki shiva umos hayu bala Yericho, v'amar Reb Shmuel bar Nachmini Yericho, nagra shel Eretz Yisrael. Nichbisha Yericho, miyad kol aris nechdashes. This was the entranceway. This was the key to getting into the land of Israel. If you could break through Yericho, everything else would be easy. So this becomes a very important battle.
So there are seven nations.
Seven, yes.
Right.
Okay. Great.
We're going to go against the Jews.
Right, in this battle. It's a big battle. Right? And also, it ends, the Medrash says, Maksir Vayera Ha'amah, he's called Shofros, Malam Shafil Yeshua Tamidol Nishtamish Bem. We also see from here that Yeshua has to use a shofar. He can't use the same chatzotzros that Moshe had. Now, the Avnei Nezer has an interesting question. It says in the Chumash that there are certain times when we blow the shofar. We blow the chatzotzros, I mean, when we want to gather people, they blew the chatzotzros. Correct, they supplied on Yom Tov. That is not time. They also, what?
Didn't they blow them as they're going up the steps?
It's different.
Right. No, this is talking about when it's time for them to move.
Yeah.
They would do it then. And also by wars. They would do it by wars. So the question is, what type of war would you blow it by?
You mean when they were in the desert?
In the desert,
they
correct.
They blew it when it was time to grow.
Correct.
They wanted a lot of people to
Right, and everyone needed to go. So you'd give the blow. Dun, da, 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 and then they'd say, time to go. Better pack our stuffs. So She'elam, the Avnei Nezer has the following question. Im Yisrael k'shayu yotu mechomer rishus. The question is, you used to blow it when you went to war. Is that only when they were being attacked or even during an offensive war? It says when there is a war in your country. Right? Meaning that it's only when it's coming upon you, not when you're attacking others. So that's the question here. And the answer itself is not what we're focused on. Just give you a little bit. He thought, in fact, that no, only offensive wars. What's his proof? In fact, if you look at the Rambam, he never says that there's a mitzvah.
Offensive war, not offensive war.
Correct. Because it says, the Rambam never says you have to do it when you go to war. Rather, he says, Rakal Ribe is Sara. Whenever you're in Tsaris, that's what you're doing.
It makes sense.
Right.
You don't want to ruin the element of surprise. When you attack, you don't want to blow to let the enemy know that you're coming.
Well, on the other hand, as you're going in, you want to make a lot of noise. Yeah, I can hear that both ways. But in this case, what he's saying is that, in fact, we blow the shofar. It's a form of tefillah. It's a form of crying out when we're in trouble, so that would work. However, look at Dalet. It says, Ach b'sifrei yuchizo mechobar artzuchem. The sifrei says other aim. The Sifrei says, Beferish, whether it's offensive or defensive. Now, this is all interesting, but why are we discussing it here in Yehoshua? Thank you for asking. So the answer is, there's a footnote. It says, Tzorach Lomar. Wait a second. We blew here. Didn't we blow here? This is an offensive war. So why doesn't he bring a proof?
Maybe there's a distinction between an offensive war where you're trying to conquer new territory and Kibush HaAretz itself, where you're acquiring your own land from the get-go.
Well, yes, that would be different. On the other hand, if we're saying that the reason for it is a form of tefillah because we're being attacked, that wouldn't make a difference.
But a form of tefillah that we should be victorious in acquiring our own land.
So, but that's the case. Let it always be that way. So the Avnei Nezer says that that's really not related to this at all. Why? Potato, the mitzvah is a number of a hari osam, v'shel kol osam hayamim tikuv o hiriyu. What type of shofar, well, how would they blow it? They would blow a trua. Here we're blowing a tekiah. So he says it's already different. V'yom ashi levad hiriyu kol am trua gedola. Only then did they blow it. V'gam lo nisker, this is Sham Teva Zikaron, and no place to say that this is so God should remember us. If there are a reason we were blowing is not so Hashem should hear us, so why didn't it mention that? Why would they be blowing all week? So the bottom line is what he says is that this was unrelated to anything else. You can't bring a proof for him. Why did they have them blow the shofar? For whatever reason, God wanted it, but it wasn't a typical, we're going to war, let's blow the chatzotzros.
He said, we blew the shofar when we moved in the desert, because we moved, 40 times or something?
Approximately.
Around. So, but they weren't in trouble when they moved in?
No, there was different reasons. One time you'd blow it this way, when they just wanted to gather people.
Okay.
That was another reason.
Okay, but he said it was when we only blow on the chauffeur when we're in trouble.
Well, that's, again, the war type of blow.
Oh.
Right? Meaning that, again, we don't blow anymore. Like the desert, let's get people together. We don't blow anymore for the, okay, the whole country's going to pick up and move now. So this is different. Going back to your point earlier, though, which we'll discuss in the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Shogar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Ma likach batim min hagoy. Am I allowed to go and buy land in Israel from the Arabs on Shabbos?
You're allowed to do
kibush
on Shabbos.
So can I do business on Shabbos?
No.
But here's the thing. Kibush is a form...
1 second. Why do you assume you can do kibush on Shabbos?
Because I've learned that a lot.
Shkayach. It's hard to argue with a source like that, I tell you. That's pretty primary.
No, but I assume that's where you're just... and pigeon shorting, the same thing. You could go...
That's pikuach nefesh. I don't know if that's the same thing. I think it's a different thing.
Saving a life, saving a land, requiring it.
What kind of, and you know, and you know, and giving tzedakah, and you know, and tying tzitzis. Okay. All good things, absolutely. Okay, we support them. So that was the question. Are you allowed to go and purchase a house in Israel from a non-Jew on Shabbos? Amar Lei Amos, Rebbe Shaul B'Shabbos. So he says, well, when do you want to do this? On Shabbos. Toni b'Shabbos mutter. You're allowed to do it on Shabbos. How do you like that?
Who said that? Rabbi Black.
Oh, we're going to have to edit again. Kate said, Osa. So how do you do it? Mara lo kisin shel dinarim v'agoy chosim umare v'arkoim. What you're supposed to do is say, okay, the money's over there, and the guy takes it, and he does the rest. What's the proof? Because we captured Yericho on Shabbos. How do we know that? The Ksiv Kota says Sheishas Amim. The Ksiv Bayom Hashviyita Sobo Esayir Shiva Pamim. The Ksiv Ad Ridita Afilu B'Shabbos. So it says that the seventh day was the day of Shabbos.
Why does that imply necessarily Shabbos? That could have started on a Monday. It could have started on Wednesday.
Because again, it's,
I mean, it doesn't mean that I wasn't.
So again, well, I could point out this is a machlokes between Shlomo Fried and Yerushalmi, but instead I'm going to go with the idea that again this Shlomo is a pretty broad. The assumption is that when you talk about it says sheishes yomim and then a yom hashvii, it's indicative. Right? It sounds like Parshas Bereishis that we're talking about Shabbos. That's what Yerushalmi assumes.
Well, he said every day. Didn't God tell them every day to go and? So that would include Shabbos.
Right. So correctly, Marsha points out that even if the seventh day wasn't Shabbos, the other 6 days when they were blowing shofar were, one day had to be. What?
But you said the other days they didn't blow. They just carried.
No, they, what? Right. Well, the other days they blew, I think, once. What did we hear say? No. Or maybe you're right.
But they went marched around.
They marched with the shofar. Right. But they didn't blow.
Correct.
The act
but
of marching,
anyhow, it's good. This is the Yerushalmi. Bavli, number four. Amar Rav Sheshes Lomar Shekosvim Olav Ono of Afilu V'Shabbos. Bavli quotes the same halacha. This time not more Kotan Begit, and he said you're allowed to do it even on Shabbos. But Shabbos al kedai tuch. You mean on Shabbos? You're going to buy a house on Shabbos? Come.
Not me.
No.
Just got enough
Could Omer Rava Omer Rahobe Khovim Vaose. You have a non Jew do it. Hachi Nami Omer Khova Ose, Rachogab Damila Akum Shavus, Bishum Yishav Eritiswaro Gazar Abanan. So again, it does not have the same source as we do. It does not mention Yoshua as it did in the Yerushalmi, but it does agree with that. Now, the question is well, why did Yoshua have the right to go and violate Shabbos? So the Medrash has actually a list of reasons, right? I think Carl's is probably the best because God said so. Right? It's good.
That's a primary source.
Right. It's the primary source. That's quite kind of what we say: game, set, match. Done. So it says, Im Yomach Adam, Ramachil Yoshua Sa Shabbos Viricha. And if someone should turn to you and say, Marsha, why did Yoshua violate the Shabbos in Yericho? Emo Api Gavurosa. Well, God said so. Shinema Vayema Hashem Yoshua Reina Sati Bachas Yericho. The Chesiv Sabose Mesair. Kotasa Shesh Jamim Vishiva Kodim Vayema Shitsa Seir Sheva Pamim Vakomis Gubashofros. The ninth Torah is Chesiv Bashabbos. How do you know it's Shabbos? We were asking. She ain't Volum Shivas Yamim below Shabbos. What if you don't say this? The bottom line is that God told him you do it on Shabbos, and the fact that God allows on Shabbos the capture of the land also indicates, Yerushalmi says it quite clearly, that you're also allowed to buy the land. Now, interestingly, what does Yeshua do to celebrate this? So if you look at number 6, an interesting point. V'achar kol tfilos, it says, the Kolbo says, at the end of davening, we always say, Aleinu l'shabeach. The paragraph of Elazar Omer, Shevach godol yesh v'aleinu l'shabeach. Aleinu l'shabeach is a very important prayer. Right? As it says, Al kein tzarech omer me'umad. Because it's so important, you have to stand when you say it. V'timsa aleinu ole b'gamatria u'me'umad. And in fact, the gamatria is the same as aleinu, and to stand. And when Yeshua captured Yericho, he instituted the Aleinu. How do you see? V'chosim bo shem katnus al mafreya. Aleinu shabeach adonu come begins with then. Ayin. Second, shelo asanu. Right? Third one, v'anachnu karim. Hu alokeinu enod. Was it spelled backwards? Hosea, correct. That in fact, that's what he did. He put in his name into it. Interesting. What? We'll discuss that. But he also left out. What? What? Certain melodic section of Edo. Elena's been having a tough time in Edo as of late. Right, yeah, so, interesting. The Sefer Megala Amukos, the number 7.
Rabbi Simon is very
famous. What?
Rabbi Simon loves this Sefer.
Yes.
Somebody wrote on Beschan, and he wrote a whole Sefer on
Beschan. And guess where number 7 is found? As fate would have it. Megala was on Eschanan, as fate would have it. It says, V'chosav Yoshua Shemo B'nusach Aleinu L'mafreya Hu Alkeinu He Shal Hosea V'anach L'korim Vav Shal Asanu Shin Ayin Shal Aleinu Shabeach Hu Ayin Shal Hosea U'v'nei Ha'anova Chosam L'mafreya V'lo Hiskir Yud. Because he was so humble, he did it backwards so people couldn't read it so easy. And then also he didn't put in the Yud. V'ad ein o tiken Yoshua. So he only did the first seven until ein o. Al kein nekava. Who wrote that? We'll find out next week. Actually, that doesn't make it till the next paragraph. So.
So he only wrote the first paragraph.
Right, the first half. Right? One point worth noting. With that, we'll go back to the Navi number 9. Yerushalmi comments that the reason that that on Hoshana Rabbah we go around 7 times. Also, Yom Akivin Asim Zveh Shavim Omer Rav Acha Zecher Yiri Yericho. What do the two have in common? I don't know, but it's probably a good fodder for a drusha for somebody. Right, but in fact, there is that connection there. Okay, so that's the rules. Here's what we're going to have to do. Pasuk Vav. Vayikra Yehoshua ben Nun el HaKohanim vayom alayhem. Suas Aron HaBris v'shiva HaKohanim Yisu shiva shofros yovrim lifnei Aron Adonai. So he tells the Kohanim, you have to carry the Aron, and there will be 7 other Kohanim holding the shofros in front of you.
Where does he come up with the idea of bringing the Aron? Oh, lifnei Aron.
Right.
Okay.
But where did he come up with the idea that the Kohanim have to carry it? So in general, do the Kohanim or the Levium carry the Aaron? Anybody? Leviim?
No, they can't carry the ark.
Kohanim?
Oh, carries the soul. Doesn't
it? So if you remember, this is a machokas between the Rambam and the Ramban we had back when we were holding back the Jordan River. Right? There's a question of whether the Kohanim always do it, except for in the very beginning when there weren't enough Kohanim, which is the Rambam, or the Ramban, who says, no, it's always the Leviim who do it, with rare exception, where there's a specific reason not to.
But wasn't there something that you said there was a Midrash where the Aaron actually carried the Kohanim back?
Correct, correct. Well, one day when we get to Peretz Uzzah and Shmuel, we will discuss it more at length there. That, in fact, but that being said, whether they were practically holding it up or not is a question.
Or just holding onto the staves.
Correct. So, this arguably, according to the Ramban, is one of the exceptions where the Kohanim instead of Leviim carried. And in fact, that's what the Gemara in Sota says. Again, number 9, Tanya Rav Yossi, Omer B'shloshim Mekomos Nosu HaKohanim Es Aron. There's only 3 times that the Kohanim carried it. And they were, 1, Kishe'avru as a Yarden, what we learned about earlier, Kishe'esibu as Yericho, that's here, and the third one's going to be later on in Shmuel, Kishe'ziru l'mkomo. When he came back from Stei Plishtim, again, the Kohanim took it there. Indicating these are exceptions to the rule, but generally the Leviim took it. Okay, Vayomer Elham, Ivru v'sovu as ir ha'acharutzia avor lifnei Aron Adonai. He says, okay, I want you guys to go around. See, and the chalutz should go in the front. Who are the chalutzim? Right. Right. Chalutzim Yavoru, they go in the front. Vayihi kemor Yehoshua el ha'am. V'shiva akodim nosim v'shiva shofros ha'yovim lefnei Adonai avru v'toku b'shofros arom bris anoy ha'lecha achareyem. So it seems every day they blew once, and then the Aaron walked behind them. V'acharutz holech v'nei akodim tokei ha'shofros v'ha'ma'asef holech acharei Aaron haloch v'tokei b'shofros. And the chalutz, Rashi here finally says it, b'nei Reuven v'nei Gad, they were going in front, and the osef, ha'ma'asef, were in the back. Who are the ma'asef? Dan. Because Dan is referred to as ma'asef l'chol ha'machanos. Right? So you had the Gad and Reuven's in front, Kohanim, the Aaron, Dan. And they would go around once a day. People looking out the windows can't figure out what these crazy Jews are doing. All right, fine. Put it on a show. Very nice, very nice. They applauded, moved on. Good. Tess. Okay, we just did that. Yud. V'asa'am tziva Yahshua le'imor lo sariv lo sashmiv as kolchem lo yitziv pichem davar ad yom amri arechem hariv v'hariosem. He says, okay, I don't want you guys blowing. I just want you guys to stay quiet. Just do this march until I tell you otherwise. So, first day they go around one time, and then they pack up and they go back to sleep. Call it a night. Next morning, goes, takes it again. V'nei Aaron Adonai holchim halach, v'takol b'shofros, v'chutz holich v'neim, v'ama'asef holich acharei Aaron Adonai halach v'takol b'shofros. Okay, that's what they do the next day. V'yasov v'yaseir v'yom hasheni p'am echas, v'yeshuva machne, kovasu sheish zavim. Same thing. They get up, they march around one time, and then they do nothing. Do it one day, 2 days, 3, 4, 5, 6 days. Nothing happening. Vayihi bayom ha-shvi'i, vayashkimu ba'alos ha-shacha, vayasobu es-a'ir kamishpat hazeh sheva pe'amim. Rak bayom ahu sovu es-a'ir sheva pe'amim. And this time, they didn't just go out once, but they ran once, twice, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Vayihi ba'pam ha-shvi'is, taku ha-kodim ba-shofros, vayom yoshua al-am, hariyu ki nasan adonai rochem es-a'ir. So the Kohanim blow, they say, everyone, okay, everybody blow your shofars, because God has given us over the city. Says, I want you to destroy everything in this city. Burn it to the ground with the exception of Rachav and her stuff, because we promised. because she took care of us. Rak atem shumer min acherim pentachrimu v'kachte min acherim v'samtem esamachisel v'acherim v'achartem oso. Said, be careful. No one takes anything, because if you take something, we're all going to be in trouble. V'chol kesev v'zahav v'chay nechoshes uvarzel kodesh hu adonai otzer adonai yavo. Gold and silver, etc., that goes to the Mishkan. Everything else gets destroyed. So what happens? Vayara ha'am vayisku ba'shofros vayi kishmo ha'am eskol ha'shofar vayariyu ha'am trua gedola vatipo ha'choma tachtea vayal ha'am ha'ira ish negdo vayilkadu esayir. And with that, they blow the shofar and the walls come tumbling down. And with that, they have no wall in their way and they attack the city. Let's take a look at number 10. Well, so we didn't talk about it. We perhaps should talk about it, because if you look at number 16 and 17, which are English in honor of Marsha, of course, right? There is. I wanted to touch at the end a little bit on the archaeology of it all, whether archaeology.
I mean, obviously it's a miracle, a large miracle, but just blowing the shofar doesn't seem strong enough to bring the walls down.
Depends who. Yitzchok?
What?
So all of a sudden the walls come tumbling down. 10. V'haysa yirchem hi v'chol asher bo l'Hashem. So the question is, why does Yahushua make this decision to destroy everything? Which in hindsight seems to have been a pretty bad decision, we'll see.
He decided to destroy. I thought God told him to destroy.
No, God never told him to. This was he made his own call.
The silver and the gold was his call?
Yeah. Right, really, we could have taken it all. We could have taken slaves, we could have taken the animals, we could have taken... What's the issue? Carrying? What's your... So again, so kill all the people and then take it tomorrow. It's not going anywhere. So the Medrash has several approaches to this. One, first answer is what Jenny said. Because Shabbos is holy, everything that is captured on this day should be holy. That's answer number one. Brachia Cohen says he made it like an ir nidachas. An ir nidachas is a city that is destroyed because it is full of idol worshippers. And what do you do to a city like that?
Get rid of them to the grass.
And below.
And the animals too.
Even
but
Sydney?
I don't understand why the animals had to be killed.
Mm. Killing the people you're fine with.
Yeah, that was okay.
But the animals.
Oh, terrible.
I hear you. I don't know how I could possibly answer that. Yeah. I was just saying, Nasid, I do feel your pain.
Okay.
Good. Okay, so that's the second opinion, is because it's like an ir hanidachas. As it says, v'sarafta v'esha se'ir v'eskol shalah. Number three, v'cheinu omer. V'yachrim eskol asher v'ir me'ish v'adisha minar v'adzakin v'adshor v'sev v'chamor v'fi charev. So that's two reasons. Next, omer of Yuda Halevi bar Shalom, limid yisrael mash omer akarish baruch hu, reishis ariso sechem chava terima truma. So it says that, for example, when you grow into something in a field, the first thing you get is bikurim. It's given to God. The first should be given to God. It's an interesting, right? Also, when you shear your sheep, right? You have reishis hageis, right? That goes to God. Reishis ariso sechem goes to God. It's very interesting. This is, as I've pointed out other times, this is not just the Jewish idea. You walk into a store sometimes, you see a dollar bill hanging behind the cash register. What's that dollar doing there?
It's the first money
that they... one shita, right? The first one, again, the first thing you get, you give over to God. I'm sure I mentioned my trip to California. Ever mentioned this?
Atheist convention?
I heard you're the chairman this year. So Kalinske tells me. I was in L.A. I had a callback for a job interview there. In my previous life, when I used to be an attorney, so I went for the weekend. I had a wonderful time. I gave Daf Yomi in Century City that weekend, and it actually came the morning of the interview, and I realized I had never even brought a hairbrush with me. And these people had paid. They flew me out. I think it was business class, and they paid for my weekend, etc. And I thought it was a little chutzpah not to at least comb my hair for them. So I decided after Shacharis I was going to go get myself a hairbrush. So Daven Shacharis in Century City, and nothing opens that early in California, it seems. So I drove down Pico, and I turned on Robinson, and finally I found like some store, random store open. I ran into the guy, and I said, "Do you have a hairbrush?" He said, "Yeah, they're in the back." So I went and I took the hairbrush and I gave him $5. And he just stood there staring. I said, "Listen, I know I'm a New Yorker and you're clearly not, but is there a reason why we're waiting?" He said, "Today's my first day open and you're my first customer." I said, "Really?" I said, "Are you going to frame that bill?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Could I give you a check?" $5,000, I'll take the change. Yeah.
He didn't take you up.
No, he didn't. I assume my $5 bill is hanging there someplace if the guy made it. It's been a lot of years. It would have been a successful business if he's still there. So, but that is the third answer. Just like the first thing that we make Kodesh Hashem, so too Yoshua thought, the first of the cities that we conquer as part of the conquest, that should also be for Hashem. So either because it was Shabbos, or because it was an Ir Nidachas, or because the Bikurim, that's why Yahshua made the call.
But didn't you say that everything was destroyed except for the gold and silver?
Which were?
To go to the Mishnah.
So Bikurim also isn't destroyed.
Right, but there were lots of other useful, valuable objects there. The war in gold.
So again,
cannonball swords, etc.
Aminals?
Aminals, sure.
Right, use them also.
All of the above.
Why have to kill the animals? So yeah, right. These are why he made that call. Why he said this, that, and that, I don't know. These are the three opinions as to why he made this decision. Now, what happens to the walls? So we know that they, in fact, traditionally came a tumbling down. If you look at the Gemara in Brachas, the Gemara in Brachas talks that there are certain things, when you see them, you have to make a bracha. Old Faithful, Haroah, so one thing on the list is Chomas Yericho Shenivla B'mkomo. The walls of Yericho that were swallowed up in their place. So it sounds from the Gemara, it's not that they tumbled it down, or rather, they sunk into the ground. You have to make a bracha when you see that. The question is, wait a second. It got sunk into the ground? He says, no, it's against the song. The song says they came a tumbling down. Not that they were swallowed up. How can you say that? In fact, it's not just the song, it also happens to be the Navi. Kevin de Fosel Veruma ki hada dinhu mishum hachi ivoye brigui. He said that actually these walls were as thick as they were tall. So if they would have fallen over, it actually wouldn't have made a difference. So therefore there was no choice but it had to sink into the ground. That's what it says. Okay, let's go on in the Navi. So what do? They attack. Chaval v'yachrimas kol asher ba'ir. Me'ish v'ad isha minar v'ad zakein v'ad shor v'seva chamor l'fi charev. They killed everything. They killed men, women, children, the elderly, the livestock, the donkeys. Everything got killed by sword. So he says to Yoshua, to Kalev and Pinchas, "I want you go. You're the ones who swore. and you save Rachav. Vayevo hane'arim ha'meraglim vayotzir es Rachav es aviyah es sibah es acher es kol asher ra es kriz meshbechoseh ha'otzir vayanichu michos ha'machane Yisrael. So with that, they go in. They refer to as ne'arim.
It's kind of odd.
It's kind of odd. How old were they? What? Yeah, they're at least in their 40s.
Okay.
Right? Both of these. So again, it happens to be that we will find out later on exactly how old Kalev is here. He's 45, we find out. And Pinchas, we know, was also, he was born at the very beginning of the 40 years. So he's, again, I like to think his mid-40s is pretty young. Right? I don't see the question. That's cool. Right? Just saying. Posh Pasa. So you guys go, you save her. Vayevo ha'nerim ha'meraglim v'yotziu es Rachav es aviyah, etc. So they go, the entire family is saved. But, and they take them, and what do they do with them? They put them behind Machane Yisrael, far away from the battle. Va'ir safu ba'esh v'chol asher bar rak ha'kesev v'ha'zahav v'chei nechoshes v'ha'barzol nasu otzer beis Adonai. The medals were saved for the Mishkan, everything else, forget it. Ves Rachav Hazona Ves Beis Aviyah Ves Kol Shara Hechia Yoshua Vateshev Bekerav Yisrael Ad Hayom Hazeh Ki Hechbiya Es HaMalachim Asher Shach Yoshua Ragel Es Yericho. As for Rachav and her family, they continue to live among us to this day. Now the good time to discuss what to this day means. Right? In appreciation for the fact that she hid the two spies. And with that, Yoshua makes the following statement. Vayashba Yoshua ba'esa hilevar. Arur ha'ishrif ne Adonai she yakum uvana esair hazos esiricho bibchoro yisadena uvitzira yatziv drasa. Yoshua sets forth a curse. And the curse is, cursed be the person who ever rebuilds Yericho. When you start to rebuild Yericho, your oldest son will die. And as you complete it, your youngest child will die.
They've never done anything, the Jews, with Jericho.
Correct.
And it's like that.
Vayhi Adonai Yoshua. And with that, Yoshua is supported. Now, a few things. One is, I'm just going to mention it quickly, but in fact, the curse was an interesting one. Not only could you not rebuild Yericho, even with a different name, but there is a curse against anyone who builds any city and names it Jericho.
Oh.
Jericho, Long Island.
Yes. So, that's...
What was his beef towards Yericho?
Clearly, he didn't like it much. Right? And in fact, but someone took Yoshua on. If you go to the Malachim Aleph, there is a fellow who decided to rebuild Yericho. So this fellow, Chiel, who rebuilt Yericho, number 12, the Pasuk tells us, B'yama bana Chiel, beis ha'eli, es Yericho, and ba'aviram b'choro yisada. And his son Aviram died when he started it. And as he finished put on the doors, his last son died. Kidvar Hashem Asher Dibir B'yad Yoshua Ben Nun. What?
Bad real estate.
Hey, so the investor might have turned out good, but you know, in fact.
Is the curse over now?
What?
Is the curse over now?
No, don't try it, Alan.
Does anyone who's done it? Right. You mean that just the first guy?
Right. That was, in fact, this came to pass.
Does that mean the city itself will also?
So
we haven't redone anything. It's
so
like
the Mora Nevuchim, the Rambam deals with the issue of the beef that he had with it. I think that's the
why
quote.
Why was he so?
So the Rambam writes, "Uzeh hatam ba'atzma hechvim Yeshua misha bana Yericho la'olam." He said that no one should ever do this. Why? That no one should ever cover up the miracle that happened. When you see the walls are sunk, people realize that that was a miracle. This wasn't just something that happened. I don't need to prove anything. However, when there's a reason why we make a bracha on it.
Granted, but I'm saying, in theory, if we have to always look for the item itself,
We don't have to look for the item, but if the item is available and people see it, and then with that they come to recognize God.
Understanding just from learning, is it for other Ami, or is it for Klal Yisrael?
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Want to see it?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool. Right? I think that would be something to see. There's definitely value to it. That's it. Either that or the YMCA at Estes Park, one or the other. We can't decide which one we're going to do next. Those are the two finalists. One other thing before we get back to that, and that is the status of whatever happened with Rachav, who lived among us. So the Gemara makes something says very interesting. The Gemara, there was someone called Chulda Hanaviya, Chulda the prophetess. So it says, Chulda Hanaviya, Chulda Mibnei Benav Shal Yoshua Isa. So the Gemara Miguel tells us that she is a descendant of Yahshua. Ksiv Hacha ben Charchas, because it says by her ben Charchas. Ksiv Hacha by Yeshua said betimnas Cheres, that there is a connection in the language which indicates that. Esrei Rav Ina Saba Rav Nachman. So Rav Ina Saba said to Rav Nachman, Shmonu Neviim v'hem kalim yatsum Rachav Azona. Wait a second. This isn't a descendant of Yahshua. This is a descendant of Rachav. Because there are eight great prophets that came to them, the Elohim, and they have a list: Neriah, Baruch, Sroya, Machasya, Yirmiyah, Chilkiyah, Chana, Amal, Vishalum, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Av Chulda, Neviyah, B'nei B'nei, Shal Rachav, Azon, Aisa. How can you tell me it comes from that Chulda comes from Yahushua? Chulda comes from Rachav. Sivhacha ben Tikva, Sivhasa, Ves Tikva, Chut Hashani. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, Ina Saba, my dear friend. You've learned a lot of Torah. Me name Inachtis Taim Shmaisa. But we can get along between the two of us. What happened to Rachav? The Igaira in this way, Yoshua. She converted and she in fact married Yoshua. That's what became of her. And they had children. Wait a second. Me happy Rezarli Yoshua. But I thought Yoshua never had any sons. How could that be? Baksiv nun b'no Yoshua b'no. He said, b'ni rohavilei, bintan havilei. They didn't have sons, they had daughters, and these were the descendants of the daughters. So that, in fact, is what happened here. The Tosfos is a little concerned. Wait a second, if she was from the 10 tribes, how was she allowed to convert? So that we had done this Tosfos beforehand, and Tosfos says, well, it could just very well be that she wasn't from these seven nations. She had just moved there from someplace else. So, in fair the fact, that's why she was allowed to.
That makes sense why she was protected. She was
could be. Right? So, in fact, that's the story. I give.
All of these descendants were Kohanim.
What?
They were all Kohanim.
Why is that? Right?
Just every one of the daughters married a Kohanim.
Well, again, this is a few generations later. This isn't the next generation. The. Yoshua is a very important book for discussions of issues of archaeology. Now, you would expect Yoshua, of all the Nevi'im, to have the least archaeological evidence. Why? Because it's the oldest, correct? You don't get more archaeological evidence as time goes by, you get less of it. Right? Things get destroyed, things get covered, things get wiped out. So obviously when you learn Malachim, you're going to have a lot more archaeological evidence than you're going to have in Yoshua. But that being said, there's a lot of work being done about various parts of Yoshua, you know, and particularly trying to pinpoint the geographic location. I give you here parts of articles. If anyone wants the entire article, I will intend on posting those in the source sheets that go up online. So you can easily get it. I just didn't want to print them all out and have them all end up in Seamus. As this inevitably does. Originally, in the 1950s, there was a British archaeologist called Kathleen Kenyon. She concluded, it is a sad fact that of the town walls of the Late Bronze Age, within which period the attack of the Israelites must fall by any dating, not a trace remains. She said, if you look at Jericho, there is nothing from Jericho that dates back to when Yoshua was there. The excavation of Jericho, therefore, has thrown no light on the walls of Jericho, which the structure is so vividly described in the book of Yoshua. So you have expected to find stuff? Well, guess what? It's just not there. And in fact, we quote Kenyon, her co-author, says, Kenyon concluded with the reference to military conquest theory and the late Bronze Age walls that there was no archaeological data to support the thesis that the town had been surrounded by a wall at the late of the late Bronze One, circa 1400 BCE. So, however, this fellow, in 1999, Brian Wood, wrote a very long article where he strongly supports the idea that, in fact, there is plenty of archaeological evidence. However, a careful examination of the archaeological evidence collected through the century leads to quite another conclusion. Jericho's was once thought to be a Bible problem because of a seeming disagreement between archaeology and the Bible. When the archaeologists correctly interpreted it, however, just the opposite is the case. The archaeological evidence supports the historic accuracy of the biblical account in every detail. So he goes through a long list of details from the archaeological evidence that, in fact, support the idea. One is there were huge grain storages that had been burnt at the time. Now, why would anyone be burning large grain storages? Why would you even have large grain storages? Large grain storages indicate that they were preparing for a siege, right? Burning it down is what the Navi says, that it was a cherem. That in fact, everything was destroyed, as we said. That of the food, nothing was saved. Of course, that's something that would have been very useful, the food, right? Also, the way that the walls fell. Again, there are piles of rocks, which would indicate that, again, you have a wall, and it fell in such a way to cause a ramp, which would allow the people just to walk straight in. Right? So there are many things. And number one, his number one proof is, in fact, he took these grains, and he dated the grains, and the grains fit pretty exactly to when Yahushua was there. So in 1999, there was great joy in Mudville, because, in fact, it seemed that this probably goes back to 90, right, that in fact everything was right, everything fit in, and if anything, archaeology supports the idea. Now again, much like people should not have been tearing their hair out in the 1950s when the report came out and said archaeology doesn't match, people should not have been jumping for joy in the 1990s either. Because afterwards, things turned around in another significant way. The problem was that how did he do the radioactive carbon dating of the grain? He had it done by the British Museum. The British Museum afterwards, unrelated, came out with a report said, sorry, but our machine was broken. And in fact, the dates we gave him were wrong. And the other dates were right. So again, so there is a fascinating back and forth of articles regarding what we know about Yericho. I think at this point we have a pretty good idea of where Yericho is, and we strongly believe that this story actually happened, and I would not build a casino there if I was anyone, because that wouldn't be a very smart move. But in terms of, does archaeology support this? Is it against it? Is it, at this point, it's in flux. And again, if anybody's interested in the articles, I can hand it to you, or you can just download it. Because when they put up the audio, I will add the complete articles with it. Thank you very much.